What you are listening to is real. The participants are not actors. They are real people with a case pending in podcast court. Hello, I'm producer Peter, and welcome back to Cage Match, a roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage, podcast court. Today's case is between a man with a penchant for heavy metal and really bad Eric Estrada jokes, and a man who knows his alphabet a little too well.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Perfect. John, I think your audio sounded great last episode, too. I don't know if you listened to it.
But I have touched nothing.
Great. That's exactly what we want, then.
That's how I prefer you live your life. Touching nothing.
Touching nothing and no one.
No hearts, no spirits, no bodies.
Especially no spirits. That's
fucking why I skipped town.
Well, welcome back, Lauren.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for being our
inviting me back.
Last minute fill. Yay! Woo.
Oh, great! I'm glad I'm a ringer.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny too, because like we've never had the same person in the same part of a bracket come back. So you are a special
Ooh.
Case here.
Yeah.
So you are twice in the slicks teen.
Yes. Yeah.
Double
yes.
slick.
Yeah.
Yes.
Extra slick.
Yes. Slide right off your chairs.
Gross.
You made that phrase up. This is your words.
It's true, we did. I mean, you can thank Nick for any naming conventions.
Not Nick's team, though. I think I said this last time too.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the way we're collecting Nicks, we'll eventually be able to do this again, but with Nicks.
It's true. I would have liked to have pulled in at least one more Nick this run.
Oh,
but
I see. Part of the stipulation of being a guest on your podcast should be that you legally change your name to Nick.
That would be good.
Yeah, it's reasonable. I mean, I was supposed to name either of my children
Nicholas Michael Gearhart. Tennessee.
Yeah.
Right. Noonan.
Yeah, exactly.
Noonan Nesvig.
Yeah, right.
Noonsvig.
Noonsvig, right.
Ooh, hi Noon.
Zvig. Yeah, there you go. Nesnan.
One of these days, somebody is going to name their child Nicholas Michael Gearhart, Tennessee.
Thank you for remembering Poon and Q Noonan.
Forgot about Boone and Q Noonan.
Thank you for putting the respect on Poon and Q Noonan's name.
Oh, to this day, the funniest, the hardest I've laughed out in public.
Wasn't that like just a random letter? You just like just
yes.
weird mail. Speaking of weird mail, fucking government came after me for fucking thousands of dollars this week.
Oh, lame. Because of being
probably,
an artist.
Probably we should kill a CEO about it.
It worked for healthcare.
Yay!
When I first called, they're like, your wait will be 35 minutes. Would you like us to call you back? I'm like, yes. And then I called them back and they're like, cool, we're gonna transfer you to billing. Then the machine's like, your wait is going to be 65 minutes. Please hold.
Did they have like that one 10-second loop of like bad jazz too? Ugh.
Sounds like it was recorded in a dishwasher.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, no. The absolute worst one is, anyone here have USAA? Have you ever seen the USAA commercial with their little jingle? It's just that on loop. A-A. USAA. USAA.
That's like Pavlovian. Like now I will train every listener to absolutely hate this sound and like want to punch something every time they hear it.
Speaking of annoying noises that waste your time, welcome back to Cage Match Colon, roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage. I'm Sean, here with my co-host
Nick.
And our producer.
I'm Nick.
Peter, hello.
And our last minute save returning guest.
Aw, Lauren Freeman.
Welcome back. So Lauren, you had the delightful realization that the Vampire's Kiss movie is the one that all the memes are from.
Oh,
had you
my
never
God.
Seen it before?
I hadn't. No, literally most of these movies, like, I hadn't seen before. So you have given me the gift of having to watch them. I didn't end up watching Mandy, by the way. I wanted to. And then I saw a review that was like, this movie's not for the faint of heart. And I was like, well, that's me then. It was like dark out and I was like, it sounds like a scary movie. But I did watch a shit ton of like YouTube trailers and clips and like him talking about it. There's like analysis videos everywhere. So I feel like I did my homework.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like you did a good job. It is kind of like a creepy movie. It's a little unsettling.
I am terrible with scary movies. I do this thing, like if a scary movie is interesting to me and I want to see it, I will just do the like, just see as many clips that are allowed on the internet or like analysis videos that are allowed on the internet or just like reading plot summaries. So I feel like I got the experience. This is also how I consumed like Midsommar and like Hereditary. Like I'm like, oh, that sounds scary. I'll just watch some little clips on my phone so it's not like immersive. You know?
If I watch it small, it can't hurt
probably
me.
The scariest part about Mandy is the Cheddar Goblin commercial.
Cheddar, what?
I love Cheddar. Okay. Oh, you don't know Cheddar? Yeah.
Well,
oh
if you
God,
haven't
I
seen
have
the
this.
Movie, you would.
Fuck, all right, I'll watch it while it's daylight.
It's Goblin again. Yeah.
Oh my
Cheddar
God.
Goblin is, they made a fake commercial for like a mac and cheese that is sponsored by a goblin.
Yeah, it's Cheddar Goblin brand.
And it barfs mac and cheese on children.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
I just love the idea that they were on set and they were doing this like, you know, very arty kind of scary movie. And then they're like, what if we have a dumb Cheddar Goblin commercial in the middle of it? Why the fuck not? Do you guys know a puppeteer? I know a puppeteer.
I just love Nicolas Cage staring at it and then being like, Cheddar Goblin.
That was a really good Nicolas Cage. I assume you've all worked up a really good impression by now.
You know, what's kind of amazing and very disappointing is when we do the tabletop RPG, I'm going to have to do Nick Cage voices and I'm just, they're all going to be this. So.
Or just like every, like speaking of all the memes, you just have to like recite everything in the like alphabet recitation voice. Just
exactly.
Like give me a perception check.
I like that. I think I can handle that. Peter Lowe, I think I could probably channel. Very weird affectation.
Most, yeah. Like unhinged
well, I was
human.
A little drunk, and I was horny.
Oh my God! It's like halfway to Zoolander. It's like just like a little. It's like what Zoolander became, but it's like
never go fucking, full Zoolander.
This fucking accent.
So this was sight unseen for you. What was your takeaway? Like, I mean, it's a real wild movie.
It's a wild fucking ride. Oh my God. I didn't realize, like, I thought that my interpretation of it was like, oh, well, that's, I mean, maybe this is how everybody works, but it's like, oh, well, I'm obviously right. And I know what it's about. And then I like watched this like commentary. There's like, you know, the commentary track with the director and Nicolas Cage on Vampire's Kiss. There's like a commentary track on like the DVD or whatever. There's several times of them being like, well, we don't really know what it's about. Do you know what it's about? I don't know what it's about. And we made it. Like fucking... Like I thought that I was like I had this like elevated like, oh, it's obviously about addiction, it's about cocaine, it's the same way that like Misery is about like, oh, she's your biggest fan, and like and then I'm like looking online to see like confirmation that like this is what they intended when they made this movie, and like nobody else.
Well, what's interesting is everybody's had a different take. You know, our first guest Gary and Rox, they were like full on, he is an actual vampire. You know, Sean's take is a little more like he has rabies because he probably got bit by a real bat.
Yeah.
I think he was just a little drunk and a little horny.
A little horny.
Yeah.
Who think, amongst us hasn't been?
Yeah, I think business just kind of broke him. It's that middle management, like throw yourself out a window moment.
Well, it's like, and it's also about like just being lonely and isolated, and he clearly wants a partner,
some relationship.
He wants some relationship. I like at this point watching it, I was, my kind of takeaway this time was just like, is this therapist even real? Like, is any of, are any of those scenes real, or is that just hallucinations?
Because like we have clear proof that it's a hallucination later, so like it makes you sort of reflect back and go like, was any of this fucking,
but then
anything?
he hallucinated her with that like beefcake.
Because at least she has a scene where she exists outside of him, but he could be imagining it because he's still calling her.
And like the one woman in his life who gives him like all the attention, like is he imagining her with another man or is that real? Because that just seems like such an odd like detail to throw in.
Right. And then that would be his like worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Like if he's in crisis, her being with another like much hotter, much younger man with a towel around his neck would still be his like worst, you know, like, no, you're supposed to prioritize me only.
Shirt, no ascot's a look that I'm not sure I could pull off. I'm sorry, no shirt, ascot.
I think you're currently pulling off the look of no shirt.
Sean's just out here living like shirtless ascot life.
Ooh, yeah, there you go.
I wish. There's a guy in my office who pulls off an ascot and it upsets me.
No.
Yeah, fucking great. I'm just like, ugh. Since moving to Portland, I'm in the office more. I've gone like hard on like Wild Fang apparel because I'm like, I need to have something, and I got to compete with Ascot Guy, and I want to be the fanciest lad here,
the fanciest boy.
I'm not confident enough for an ascot. I don't have that Freddy from Scooby-Doo confidence.
We all have an ascot within us, Sean. You can get there.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Within
Peter.
Every person, there is an ascot.
Within you, there are two ascots.
I do like the idea of just getting more and more confident, and an ascot just sort of like blooms.
Like it starts out as like a thread, just like a little string, no one can see it, and then yeah, it just slowly like blossoms.
I think you should misunderstand the assignment and go in dressed as a mascot. Oh, or what if you just get like a mascot costume of your coworker with a bigger ascot? So you could be an ascot mascot.
Oh, all right. This I want to do.
Unhinged. Yeah.
But with a big felt head.
All right, Lauren. So give us the quick summary of this movie.
Okay. So let's see. So Peter Lowe, played by Nicolas Cage, is a arguably high-powered executive literary agent in Manhattan who's somehow raking in an insane amount of money as a literary agent. But since he's in a suit and lives in New York, that means he's a high-powered corporate executive fellow with an assistant who he cannot help but abuse at every opportunity. He's a womanizer. He, on one of his dates, a bat flies in through his window and he gets super horned up about it. Tells his therapist, who's like, "That's nothing. Don't worry about it." goes out to the bar to pick up a different woman, and meets maybe she's real, a lady named Rachel, who he takes back to his place, and she immediately bites his neck, which he's also super horned up about. And then that's maybe the first 10 minutes of plot, and then everything else is just absolute unhinged unraveling of Nicolas Cage, inventing the caricature of Nicolas Cage so early in his career, fresh out the gate, fresh off of Moonstruck. He just went bonkers. Just the descent, like the rest of the movie is just absolute descent into madness.
It is a terrific little spiral that he sends himself down on. And I think with my watches, I assume that the time he meets Rachel, that's like his first like open, like breaking moment, like mental break. I really like when he's just talking to her and I think he's middle management, not super high powered because of the quality of his kitchen. His kitchenette is
sucks.
Like really bad.
There is
yeah,
a
his
roach
apartment
in it. There
sucks.
Is notably a roach in his kitchen.
Yeah. A water beetle.
Right. But what were you going to say?
And he's just like holding that coffee over the bed. It's like, oh man, your bed's gonna have like such a gross stain when you spill all that coffee on it. You're gonna have to like try to have sex on top of that coffee stain. Like, what happens?
It'll dry.
I'm pretty sure he doesn't have sex again in that movie.
Well, he gets bitten again, and they reuse the same footage from the previous bite.
Well,
part of that is because he was really not horned up for Jennifer Beals. Like, notably not into her at all.
Just super soft.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not that we needed to see anything beyond faces in the shot.
It is important, though. Like, it breaks the immersion if I know he doesn't have at least
just a semi. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of works, though, for the fact that she's not real. Like, if just reusing the same footage. So, like, I always assume, like, he met this woman and then started fantasizing about her. And then when he meets her again at the end of the movie and she has no idea who he is.
Yeah.
Because none of it was real. Oh, and at the point where he meets her again, he's eating
bad shit crazy. He's he also killed a woman.
And I
those two things,
before, but I absolutely love the little detail of him putting the fake plastic teeth back in his mouth after he bites the woman.
After barfing. Yeah. Yeah. Also, like, in that scene, like, I feel like I've heard people debate about, like, well, those stupid teeth, like, he couldn't have possibly done any damage. Like, obviously he took them out, and, like, you can do damage even with human teeth biting somebody in the jugular. But, like, it's clear, like, the makeup effects is, like, four, like, human teeth marks. Like, they made sure to do, like, four, you know,
proper,
like, dull ass teeth marks.
Right.
Yeah. Like,
there is the very, like, slow, like, he turns around, face covered in blood, and you just see him, like, pop the teeth back in. Like,
yeah, yeah.
They were paying attention.
Right. I love that. I mean, I truly can't imagine how you could come away from the movie thinking that he did, in fact, turn into a vampire. Because I feel like the movie is so clear. Like, so fucking clear. Like, this man is just insane. He's just insane. Like, the like, reflection moment where he's like, where am I? Oh, Christ, where am I? Like with, like, seven different reflections visible in the shot, like, six different, like, reflections of reflections. He's like, no, you're right there, buddy. Hey, bud. You're there.
I think this movie really suffers from its reputation and people just saying how bad it is. Because if you have to watch it critically, which I've had to now four times.
Like, yeah, right.
It's got a through line start to finish. It's not a long movie, so it's a pretty tight film. So
yeah,
I think that people are just like, oh, he's a vampire. Oh, this movie's terrible, or, like, unhinged. It's like, you're only watching the memes. You're only watching, like, that the performance side of it, and you're not actually paying attention to the whole movie holistically, which. Yeah, I don't think it's a hard film to follow, and I don't think it's difficult to, like, understand what's going on.
No, and I think that's a benefit of it. So I watching it, like, it was like, oh, this is basically, like, parallel to American Psycho. Like, this is just, like, high-powered executive in Manhattan is bad to people and goes down, just descends into madness and violence, and, you know, because of who he is, like, somehow he just goes off the deep end. But I think, so A, this came out before American Psycho, so this potentially inspired it. But B, I love the fact, I feel like in a world where people can take Fight Club seriously or take Joker seriously and go, like, yeah, that's my guy. Like, I'm supposed to root for this narrator. I'm supposed to identify with this man. Like, in a world where people can do that, I appreciate the fact that in this movie, they're like, he's an insufferable man, baby. You are not allowed to like him. He is objectively unlikable. Like, do not root for this man. He's awful.
I think they want you to relate more to the character and maybe think about what that means for you as a person, but most people can't think critically. Whereas with Peter Lowe, you just have that great scene of, I'm a vampire, I'm a vampire, I'm a vampire, I'm a vampire.
Running down the street. Also, I heard that, like, that, so those, all those shots, like, in public.
Yeah, this is incredible.
Where he's fucking insane. Is, like, those are long shots. Those are, like, the camera was way far away and those are real bystanders.
Yeah.
And I feel like having moved to New York a couple years ago, that shit is so true. Like, yeah, someone could be trucking down the street screaming, I'm a vampire. And you just go, like, not my problem. I didn't see it.
Yeah. It's Tuesday morning. I'm going to work right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't see. I'm not a snitch. I didn't see nothing. Like, yeah, fine. You're a vampire.
Holy shit, though. He is really, like, terrifying. I'm just imagining being Alva in those situations. Like, my favorite scene, I think, is him. He starts, his head is down on his desk. Alva.
Oh my god.
Alva.
Oh my god.
Alva, and then he runs out, leaps onto the desk.
Holy
shit!
There
you are. It's like holy fuck,
fucking terrifying. I mean, yeah, I do feel like there's like so many failures of bystanders in her orbit. Like even as she's getting like chased into the bathroom, and there's an old lady who's like, "What the hell is going on?" Like, sorry,
what is he doing in here?
Do something. What? Yeah.
And like Peter Lowe throws that other secretary's shit on her floor, and she's like, "He's so eccentric."
It's like, right. Oh, God.
He's crazy.
But yeah, even in that bathroom scene with the old lady, Alva says, "I have a gun. I will use it." And she's just like, "What the hell?" It's just like no concern whatsoever for a man being in the bathroom and a terrified woman saying she has a gun.
Well, it's a man's world.
Yeah, I mean, I think Nick has the point of it, like.
Yeah, I think that's what they were trying to say. Like, because immediately after that bathroom scene, it's like the boardroom where they're like, "She asked me for a raise," like, you know, which I think is like, thank you for being so unsubtle. Like, thank you, movie, for beating us over the head with the fact that we are not on these people's side, you know, like lest they, you know, lest the audience take away the idea that this man is somehow someone to aspire to.
He knows his alphabet, though.
Oh, he sure does know his alphabet.
Very good, Peter. You know your alphabet.
So, okay. Now that you've seen the movie, is there like a context for a meme that you like the most? Or
ooh. Gosh. I mean, the big eyes,
Tilty face.
Big eyes, tilty face. I mean, obviously, like, that's the classic. That's the one. But I actually did feel sort of a thrill going like, oh, this is the context for the yelling the alphabet. Because, like, every time I'd seen that clip, it was like, what could possibly, like, trigger someone yelling the alphabet at a sitting down woman? Like, what could possibly make this circumstance occur? So it was
like,
very thrilling.
It's a filing issue.
All right. I mean, this still doesn't make any goddamn sense, but, like, all right, here's the context. Now I understand. Yeah, what a bonkers movie. Okay, no, I want to talk about what y'all think is happening, because I feel so certain that it's about cocaine. Cocaine makes you an insufferable man, baby. Like, every problem he has is of his own making. And like every problem he has is of his own making. Like, even the way he dies, he's like, do it, please.
Please kill me. Yeah, I mean, mescaline?
I'm still convinced he has rabies, because, like,
I love
the
that.
Symptoms
I love
are
that.
There. Like, there's the bat, and then, like,
descent into madness.
And bite somebody. Physically bite somebody.
It's all, like, that's all there. But it's just, like, I think he's just lonely, and clearly nobody cares about him, probably because he's an insufferable prick. But he's clearly having some type of mental break, and just nobody seems to care. And I think he just wants any type of connection whatsoever.
But then, like, even when he gets, even in the midst of his psychotic break, even as he is fucking talking to the corner of a building and thinking it's his shrink, as he gets set up with this imaginary perfect woman, instantly he starts being an absolute prick to her too.
Yeah.
It's like he can't even not abuse his imaginary girlfriend. Like, seconds
that.
Later. Like, he's not the victim here.
No, he's not. And then I just, like, I think my first read of it from the first time we watched it was just like, that guy you see on the street corner just talking to no one, like, this is that story, like, this is how that guy got there. Yeah.
Like, had right, like, he started somewhere and he had an arc downward.
Well, I always think about, like, at the end when he's, like, dragging, like, the large chunk of wood around, like, pointy chunk of wood. And I'm just like, how come no one's concerned about that? And then last night, I'm hanging out in Portland, just standing on the street waiting to meet someone. Guy's just taking his axe for a walk, and I'm like, that's not my problem.
Because if you make it your problem, then it is a problem.
Yeah.
Probably competitive axe throwing. That seems like something Portland would be into.
This was an American Psycho type, like, that axe is being put to some use.
Ooh. I mean, you could You could throw that axe too, but
you could throw any axe if you put your mind to it.
Or was it axe body spray? Because that's also concerning to see an adult man walking down the street carrying his axe body spray.
What are your favorite scenes from this movie?
Oh my God. I mean, I think the ones that specifically just dunk on the character as soon as he makes an assertion about who he is. Like, I feel like the movie is not on this man's side. And that is deeply satisfying to me. Because I think that they are specifically trying to make a movie about, you know, I keep saying this phrase, insufferable man baby, but like, you know, like they've set up this awful person that I don't want to root for. And then the movie just kind of dunks on him. And I appreciate that. So like, you know, the scene where he, like, all of the things that he thinks, or all of the moments he thinks he's turning into a vampire, and then the movie immediately goes, no, you're not. Like, I think those might be my favorite. Like, just like the sunlight, you know, reaching his hand into the sunlight and like making a like sound as if it burns him, and then immediately like disproving that. Or like, you know, when he's like in the mirror, like touching his teeth and like checking to see if they've lengthened, and then like, no, they have not. And then he goes to buy some fucking teeth.
Another Nick Cage movie where he doesn't have enough dollars. He's often very broke.
Yeah.
What about you, Sean? Favorite scene?
Oh, I'm still so impressed by him doing the standing leap onto the desk in loafers. Like, I'm just so impressed.
From no running start, just from standing 2 feet on the ground to suddenly 2 feet on the desk. Like, well, that's Olympian right there.
Yeah, his box jump skills were pretty good. Across all of the like unpredictable vampire like scenes, I probably still like the scene where they're in the cab and he's telling Alva like she's the one who's gonna do the job, and like he has those like little power trips, which I just love him sitting there like, even if there was one other person who worked here for one day longer, I'd still make you do it.
Oh, he's such a fucking asshole.
He's such a shit. And I love when he just kind of leans into that shitness.
And you're right, Lauren. I think that the big key to this is that, like, he isn't likable. And they don't make it like, oh, you're kind of rooting for him. It's just like, you root for him failing. Like, you are like, yeah, this guy sucks. It's kind of fun watching him just absolutely eat shit and, oh, the tortures of the damned.
Yeah, oh my God, that fucking line.
There's one thing in this movie I noticed this time that I never grokked on before, and it bothered me, and I want other people's opinion on it. When he takes, when he goes to the museum with the girl he was out with at the
Jackie.
Beginning. Jackie. She's wearing a wide-brim hat and no top.
Oh, yeah.
Like, her hair is sticking out the top. Wide brim hat.
It's a style.
Like, no,
it's just a visor.
Yeah. It's a really fancy visor. And I'm like, this is weird. I don't know that I dislike it, but I don't understand it.
Okay.
It's the late 80s.
Fuck the ascot.
Crazy.
Do that now.
Yeah. You're now going to be the hat person.
Yeah. And like,
the poof out the top.
Put your hair out through the top. I like this a lot.
This is your vibe now, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've worn weirder.
So good. Embrace it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No shirt, though.
The hat. I can
never a shirt.
Yeah.
No.
Just shirts are for cowards. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let it be free.
Oh, you know, I really like the part where he runs up to that guy at the church and he's like, pull out your rosary. Show me the cross. Burn me with it. And the guy's like, I don't speak English, and like turns away. It's every time I watch the movie, something happens and I'm like, oh, I wasn't expecting that, even though I've seen it so many times and I know what's going to come. It's like, ah.
Now, the scene that always cracks me up and I always forget about it until I see it again is when he gets the fake plastic teeth, he puts them in his mouth, and he just, hands and knees, crawls off the out of the scene.
That's so good.
Towards some pigeons. So the commentary also reveals how much of that movie is just Nicolas Cage doing an insane thing on a take and the director going, yeah, all right. Like so much of the commentary is just them admitting to the fact that they were like, and what exactly is this? And the other one being like, I don't know. Like, It's like art. I think the reason that it's so iconic is that they just gave him free reign to like fucking do whatever, and it stayed in the movie. Like, they're just like, yeah, all right, like, your reflection burns you too, I guess. Or, like, putting in teeth means you crawl. Like, what? All right. Yeah, all right, go for it.
Oh, it's such a wild movie. I don't think it could work in any other city than New York City. Like, you see crazy people in other big cities.
I also don't think it would work with any other actor.
But there's something about New York City, and I agree with that too. It could not be a different actor.
Like, yeah. I don't think there's any, like, other movie that could do this either. Like, this amount of just, like, absurdity that's unscripted and unlike practiced, just, like, open the floodgates and let something happen. I don't think any other movie could capture the same kind of just appeal and allure in doing this and, like, still work as a cohesive thing.
Yeah. Lauren, if you could just give, like, your thesis, why this movie deserves to go on. You know, what's your argument? What's your push?
From what I've seen of Mandy, like, the, you know, pitting the two against each other, like, obviously the auteurship.
Without seeing Cheddar Goblin.
Without having seen Cheddar Goblin, so, like.
So your opinion means
Take it with a grain of cheddar, yeah. I think the auteurship of the director and the writer of Mandy, it's clear that there's an artistic vision, and I fucks with that. Like, that's great for me. I love that. However, if the criteria for moving forward in the bracket is quintessential Nicolas Cagery, like, this is it. This is the one. Like, this is the one that's gonna go to the end. Like, this is the most Nicolas Cage he's ever been and shall ever be and was allowed to be. I think other movies got in his way of being the batshit insane, over-the-top fucking clown that he is and must be.
It's really just this and G-Force.
Get fucked, Sean. Don't make me think about Boom Boom Pow ever again.
Yeah, Vampire's Kiss is quintessential. Like, it is the alpha and the omega. It is the birth of the Nicolas Cage identity that we all think of when we think of Nicolas Cage. Like, that's the one. Like, no question. No question at all. Everything, like, the qualities of other films that are, like, good films, they're good for other people's influence. But this one is good because of Nicolas Cage.
That's awesome. Yep. I was just sitting here thinking, like, oh man, if it hadn't been for Vampire's Kiss, if Vampire's Kiss never happened, we never would have had Face Off. Or
it's true. Yeah. I mean, that's a really good point. So, Lauren, at this point, do you want to pitch anything? Thank you for being on, by the way.
I don't have anything to pitch yet, I unfortunately. But I've got an Instagram account that you're welcome to follow me at. It's freeman.band, F-R-E-1-E.
Like the Fremen.
Like the Fremen. Yeah, I had recently read Dune when I changed my last name. And that you can do that. They let you do that. You can just change it.
You can just pick
$100 and two court dates in the state of Washington. You can just be...
Your first name can be Nicholas Michael Gearhart.
Oh, yeah.
Michael Gearhart.
Michael. Or like Macaulay Culkin. Culkin Macaulay.
Yeah. Exactly.
What is it? Macaulay Culkin Culkin?
Yes.
That's it. Yeah. That's so good.
That is a really good middle name. Macaulay Culkin Culkin.
Almost as good as Boone and Q Noonan.
You all can be
right up there.
Q Noonan.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Cool. Yeah, thank you, Lauren. Sorry for the weird time confusion.
Guys. This was so fun.
Chris, you still working for the college?
They brought me back after the pandemic, and instead of doing maintenance stuff, they decided to put me as the undergraduate services coordinator for the psychology department.
What?
It's the weirdest shit. Like, so I don't know how much time I got, but I can tell you the story of how it happened.
That's mostly our podcast. So
yeah, like, straight up, year one of the pandemic, they go through, like, all right, we got to shut down the college. Everyone who's non-essential or whatever, we're laying you off. And the entire time I'm like telling them, like, hey, so I get it, but I've been there for about maybe 13 years and had held several positions. So they have a rule at SFSU where if you get, before you get laid off, they put you in a position that you were in previously, you know? So basically they call it retreat rights. They ignored this rule that they wrote in their own book and just cut my head off. Right. So I'm sitting on my ass for like most of the year. SFSU calls me, the union calls me and says, "Hey, so, we made an oopsie poopsie. We weren't supposed to lay you off and you have two options. Take us to arbitration and you're most likely going to win because we shouldn't have laid you off, or you can have your job back." And I'm thinking like, well, I don't really like driving these computer cars and I want some benefits. So I'm like, yeah, sure. I'll take the job back. Right. The union person's like, for real? You want the job back? You're like, I just told you that you could sue us and you're going to win.
Win. Yeah.
I'm like, no, I think I'll take the job back, right? And they're like, okay. I'm thinking like, I'm going to get my old position back where I'm just like the guy with the hammer, right? And they say, well, that position doesn't exist anymore. We've literally dissolved it.
We've outsourced hammers.
Basically, yeah, they outsourced the hammers on me. And the position that the position was created for me because there was no training in this department. There was like nobody to train me on anything. Basically I had to learn everything all on my own. I mean, it's pretty chill. I'm almost certain that the game plan was stick me somewhere where nobody will bother me, because the time limit on me taking them to arbitration is like a 10-year window.
Oh shit. Okay.
Yeah. So they're like, yeah, just leave him alone. Just let him do whatever he wants.
Love that.
Yeah. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's cool to get tenure over like a threat.
Yeah, basically, exactly. Right?
Just the implication.
Like I'm literally Ralph Wiggum here. Like I'm in danger.
Welcome back to Cage Match: A Roundabout Way of Meeting Nicolas Cage. I'm Sean here with my co-host
Nick
and our producer
Peter. Hello.
And a special guest and one of my oldest friends. I think we figured 21 years. Chris Fields.
Supply. Hey, man. Yeah, I'm going to say 15 because I don't want anybody to know exactly how old I am yet. You know, still kind of struggling with the mortality.
You don't want people to know that we are very much middle-aged.
Well, the stories we have to tell suddenly have a different color to them when they realize the actual age we are. And we're like, wow, that was like literally 3 years ago and you're still that stupid?
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't gotten any smarter.
Nah. Luckily, I have some sipping cream in the mini fridge, so if I bust that out, don't mind me once in a while, but yeah.
Sipping cream? Is that like a half and half? I just got that jug of half and half?
Yeah, the jug of half and half, man. Like, I don't know if you guys are sponsored by anybody, so I don't want to say exactly what kind of sipping cream it is, but it's definitely a me kind of drink, Sean.
Tell me about your cream adventures.
All right, I'm going to show it to you guys because you have the camera, but because it needs to be like part of the whole setup. Uh-huh. It is a jar of Eggo waffle sipping cream.
I saw this when it came out. I have not tried one.
So it tastes like an Eggo waffle.
It tastes like an Eggo waffle. Judging by last night's sipping test, it definitely passes the mark. Absolutely recommend it. This is not a sponsor gig. This is just me as a alcoholic connoisseur telling you that this is probably one of the best sipping creams I've ever had in my life. And I've had quite a few.
What is a sipping cream? I've never heard this term. It's so upset.
It's moonshine, bro.
Okay.
It's just moonshine. Is it creamy? It is very creamy. It is.
Okay. So it's got the mouthfeel of milk.
The mouthfeel of milk.
Yeah.
The mouthfeel of milk and the flavor of Eggo waffle and the kick of a shot of bullet bourbon.
Okay. This is the perfect intro to discuss the movie Mandy, because this conversation is just as unhinged.
I'm still waiting for hot dog water flavored ice cream at Full Tilt.
One day.
Yeah. I would love to be licking down on a creamy hot dog water cone.
Oh, God. That really yucked me out.
Real quick, before we start discussing Mandy, Chris, what is it you do? Like, who are you besides just a guy I met right after high school?
You mean besides a guy you met after high school and the current undergraduate service coordinator for SF State University's psychology department? I am also... Yes.
I love when people just straight up dox themselves on our podcast, because I'm about to come out with some really fucking gross shit to talk about.
I already told you. They can't touch me, guys. In addition to that, I am also an esports analyst, particularly focusing on fighting games. I travel the world commentating and basically talking about video games for a living. I most recently was spotted at Tokyo Game Show in October, cool. Basically being a booth babe at the SNK booth for their upcoming release of Fatal Fury City of the Wolves.
Holy shit.
Yeah, man, they're making another Fatal Fury. It's crazy, right?
I know. I'm fucking so excited.
Yeah, it's awesome. SNK invited me out. We hung out in Japan for a couple weeks, and they paid me to basically stand around the booth, teach people how to play the game.
I'm glad one of us made it.
Did I? Did I make it?
I mean, you're doing it. I don't fucking know.
You're doing stuff, too. What are you talking about, man?
I'm talking about Nicolas Cage for...
Oh, that's true. Yes, you are talking about Nicolas Cage.
12 people.
We've got more people than 12.
Oh, that's right. I was thinking about the toilet cams again. So.
Chris, have you seen Mandy before this? I can't remember.
No, I hadn't seen it until you told me that we were going to do this show.
Because this seems something that would be up your alley from our old... getting trashed with Kevin and watching bad movies at 3 a.m.
Absolutely.
Days.
Absolutely. You know, like I mean, if it had been in my normal circle of streaming platforms, I probably would have seen it already, but it's on the Amazon platform, which is like a 50-50. It's on Amazon or it's on Amazon as another subscription option, right? Basically. Right.
Right.
So it just kind of slipped under my radar because it was a pay option. Which is weird because that other Cage movie that was basically Five Nights at Freddy's was free on Amazon.
Willy's Wonderland. Yeah.
The superior of the films too. Like,
oh, versus Five Nights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to agree with that. And I didn't even see Five Nights, but my daughter did. And she was like, yeah, it's kind of ass, you know?
Well, show her Willy's Wonderland.
Ugh, that's a bad phrase.
Yeah, words that shouldn't come out of Sean's mouth.
I'm gonna say, hold on a second, brother. That doesn't work for me, brother.
So, what was your takeaway from Mandy for your first viewing of it? I mean, it's a fucking wild movie.
It is extremely wild. The first thing that first of all, I'm gonna say I actually enjoyed it quite a bit. I'm kind of biased, though, for a couple of reasons. One, love Nick Cage movies, good and bad. Two, huge heavy metal fan. So the entire vibe of the movie was like, oh, yeah, we're dooming it. Fuck yeah, bro. I'm right there all the way.
Is it heavy metal the music or heavy metal the animated film that you're a fan of?
The music, mostly. I mean, the film is, yeah, I like the film, too, but mostly just like the imagery and the vibe that is created by most of the bands I listen to was kind of represented well in this movie. And you get that like right out the gate. Like it's a very like dark and like sludgy kind of opening. And it felt like I'm listening to like some stoner metal band in a rusty barn somewhere in Tennessee, basically, as I'm watching this movie. My takeaway though is that I actually don't know why they called it a horror movie. I felt more John Wick than I felt like slasher flick, you know?
Yeah, it's got the revenge vibe for sure. I mean, an hour of the movie is revenge cycle, you know?
Right.
For a 2-hour movie.
I guess you could say like the first act is about as horror as it gets because the vibe is entirely just like tense. Everything is just, I guess the only way I can describe it as something feels off the entire time. Like they seem happy, the couple seems happy, but something seems off. And I know something bad's going to happen, but at every moment, at almost every scene, it feels like it could happen at any moment. Is it going to happen now? Is it going to happen here? And it felt a little on the nose the way the incident occurred, and we can get into that later. But I thought the movie did a good job of like building that tension.
This is definitely one of those movies that like I don't feel really fits into any singular genre, which is probably why it's some weird artsy film made by a director who's only made two movies.
Of weird artsy films.
Right. Both artsy, weird movies.
What was the other movie he made? Because I did some research.
Rambo.
Yeah. Yeah. That was like, I still have to watch that, but I just remember reading about that thing and like, okay, this guy definitely doesn't just make movies to be making movies, right? Which is funny because he's worked with Nick Cage, who makes movies to be making movies all the time.
Out of his system.
Yeah, exactly. Something is moving through this man.
Like Nick Cage does the working actor thing, but every once in a while he does stuff like this too because he genuinely like wants to do weird shit.
Absolutely.
Well, and it's a Spectrevision too, so it's tied to Elijah Wood, and you know he and Elijah tight and both like horror movies and that kind of stuff, so I don't think it was like doing a favor necessarily. I think he really genuinely wanted to be in something like this.
He really chewed the scenery, and like the role he plays is it. At first I was kind of like, he's a little too mild-mannered for me, so I couldn't really believe the unhinged. I knew he was going to have the transformation eventually, but I was not sure I would believe it. And then it happens and I'm like, oh yeah, he's nailing it, bro. That man's falling apart. That brain is falling off the bone, bro.
How did you like his knock, knock joke?
Bro.
Being just knock, knock.
Who's there?
Eric Estrada.
Eric Estrada, who?
Eric Estrada from Chips.
It was from Chips.
Chips.
Oh, put some horniness on that Chips.
Every time I hear that joke, I'm like, this is just absurd.
Yeah. I think so. I've got like mixed feelings on this movie just in general, but the thing that I struggle with most is feeling anything about Mandy, the character. Like, she's just kind of nothing to me. Mm-hmm. And then he's also, to your point, Chris, he's also kind of nothing to start with, right?
Right.
Like, they're just sort of this like tame couple having a bland ass dinner and then like talking about planets for a little bit and then falling asleep. You know, it's like, cool.
They seem super happy, man.
They do seem happy. I will give you that. I will give you that.
I think it's less about the character Mandy and just like, you know, very milquetoast, like, safe couple gets their entire world fucked up and guy just snaps.
Yeah, I think you care more about Red and Red's like pain in losing Mandy. Like Mandy doesn't have to mean anything to us, but it's what she meant to him that you're supposed to care about.
Right.
That's fair.
I appreciate that she laughed at Jeremiah's penis.
Me too.
Yeah.
So I was not super impressed by Jeremiah as a villain. I pretty much called in my mind. I called it immediately. Like, oh, this is a guy that is absolutely paper thin, fragile, marshmallowy.
Mm-hmm. No, he's a cult leader.
Right.
Not only laughing at his penis, but his music. Oh man. Like Sean, we know if you laugh at the music, you can't come over no more. I know that.
I just love his immediate reaction to being laughed at was just to fucking angrily jack it.
Yeah, he was just like, knock it off. I'm gonna get real bad soon. Starting to get upset, bro.
Yeah, a Jeremiah Sands album would be terrific.
Do you think they made fucking Cheddar Goblin for this? Do you think they made a whole album of his music?
Cheddar Goblin is amazing, dude.
Cheddar Goblin is amazing.
I thought there should have been at least 80% more Cheddar Goblin, honestly.
Like, I absolutely love this film. And there's like a slow, like there's that slow build to the horror, the revenge aspect of it for the first hour. Small attentions to detail. And then at a certain point, the movie just says, fuck it. We're done with the plot. We're just going to get to killing. And that is when, for no reason, he is in a cave smelting an axe.
There are several points in this movie where I didn't fall asleep at all. I was watching it all the way through. And there's several points in this movie where I'm like, wait, how the hell did we get here?
I'm still not sure how he flips the truck.
Right? Like that? What the heck?
The Hellraiser dudes are just like extra strong. I don't know. I mean,
a famous man once said cocaine's a hell of a drug. So
yeah.
And they were on some, what, that super meth or something?
Yeah, that weird gray Vaseline.
Super acid.
That the guy with the tiger made, I assume.
Yeah, the chemist.
Yeah, because that's how he gets to the chemist, because he has the vision after tasting it. So yeah.
Which apparently unlocks your GPS powers.
The other 80% of the brain, like, the guy just had like the most intense strength that he never knew he had. I was kind of hoping that the bikers were actually demons, though. Like, I kind of felt like they really sold, like, this guy's got fucking claws, bro. Like, he's touching his face. He's got these super long claws on his fingers. Like, he's got to be an animal. And as it turns out, no, he's just on meth.
Right.
Doesn't cut his nails. Like, oh, okay. Yeah.
But they are summoned by the Horn of Abraxas.
They are summoned by the Horn of Abraxas. They have superhuman hearing.
Which is an ocarina.
Oh, I love the Horn of Abraxas. It's so fucking dorky.
Yeah, I love the just like world of supernatural that exists around this film, and you just buy into it because you're in the Shadow Mountains in 1983, I suppose.
Yeah.
But the Horn of Abraxas and the pale blade of whatever the
strobe
lights.
But yeah, and I like the like lighting cues that are just so like, I don't know, they're the very over the top, but it's like, oh, here's the Horn of Abraxas, green supernatural light, like flickering. It lends something really interesting to the film for me.
So this is my first time watching this film in my new place. I have a better setup where my TV is, where there's not a bunch of like outside light. And I got some backlights from my screen, so I can actually see better details in dark now. I never noticed in the scene where Mandy's getting burned in the sack that like you can see bits of her face through the sack, through the fire.
Oh shit. Really?
Whoa. Yeah. You can see like her mouth that. And it's just like, it's so much like, it's so much worse. Like actually seeing like aspects of a human body in there.
Yeah. That's fucking gnarly. There,
like, there's so many more little like details I noticed on this watch. And I just love this movie. It's weird. It's gross. And I love it.
It's a weird, fun movie. I will say though, the way she died kind of felt like, I mean, that was the way it had to happen, right? If you're going to set this man off, you make him watch her die, and they picked the most horrible way to do it. But I also felt like, yeah, it was anticlimactic. It was obviously supposed to be the trigger point, and they kind of rushed it, I guess. I felt like I wasn't really, like we mentioned earlier, we didn't really care about Mandy, but it's not about us caring about Mandy. It's about how Red feels about Mandy. And I feel like they were really trying to hammer home that she's a plot device, guys. Don't get attached. She's going down. Even if you didn't read the synopsis, you know it's coming.
Like one of the most upsetting and triggering points of the film, like the trigger point for the film is when Mandy dies. That's immediately juxtaposed with Red in his tidy whities, just screaming and stomping around.
That was the part that sold me, when he's just having the mental breakdown, hits the bottle,
goes right to the rod,
it's not helping, hits it again,
gets that bathroom hooch.
He immediately grabbed this. She's like, I'm gonna need this for a while. Yeah, man. Like, I felt like that was like probably one of the most human performances I've ever seen from Nick, honestly.
That's actually a really good way of putting it. I mean, for like a real over the top fucking movie.
Yes.
That's a human ass scene, right?
Yeah.
Like, do people really think about how would I act if the person I love just got killed right in front of me? Like, what is the response to that? And I don't think anyone has an answer other than like cry, pray. I don't know. But there's no way to capture that unless you've been through it, I guess.
And he had also like just been through some real shit too, like being tortured and like bound up with barbed wire and having to like free himself from that after seeing this incident. So there's a lot of trauma that gets unpacked in that moment of bathroom vodka.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of movies use this. A lot of movies will use that plot device to turn the hero into the hero he needs to be. But they never really focus on the transformation. They're just like, the hero's mad, he wants revenge, he now has superhuman strength, and he's suddenly good with like every type of weapon known to man, essentially, right? I mean, that's basically John Wick. They kill his dog, all of a sudden, I'm back.
This movie's just about him becoming the monster. Like, he becomes the monster at the end.
Yeah, the transformation is really the center stage here. Like, I really enjoyed watching him go through that moment, come out of it not really okay, goes to Bill Duke, Carruthers. By the way, shout out to Bill Duke. Love him. Bill Duke is like way more unhinged than he is. I think the transformation is, it's still happening in that scene. It's happening after that. It's happening all the way up to the point where he's in the car at the end. Probably the only scary moment in the movie happens where he smiles at the camera and he's got super white teeth.
I'm curious to hear what you guys think in terms of like, what happens to Red now? Does he just be, is he the monster now? Does he like go and kill people? Like, cause he's not coming back. Like, he's not just going to like drive off into the sunset. I mean, his whole worldview now is just, he sees monsters and alien landscapes everywhere. Like, what does that person do?
Does he fashion his own like penis knife? I still strongly believe that Red goes off and now he is the janitor from Willy's Wonderland. So he drives off into the wilderness and now he's just an ultimate badass defeating other evils in the world, supernatural evils.
I really do like that theory.
It kind of makes sense. I mean, having seen both of those movies, it's like, because his character as the janitor in that movie is like, what? Why is he mute? Why is he anything? It's like, oh, right, because he's seen some shit.
Do you have a favorite death in this film? A favorite murder?
Mine, hands down, is always going to be the mouth breather. Yep. Getting the
mouth
axe
breather
there.
Is the best.
Yeah,
like, there are so many really good ones that are like so fun, but him polishing the car and like really just having a moment there.
It's like, ay, 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 ay.
It's not the death specifically, but like the bald guy who like deep throats the pointy end of the axe. Mm-hmm. When he gets pulled out of the car and he just goes, you're hurting me.
Yeah, that's so good.
Honestly, the third biker that he takes down, not the one that is taking a piss outside on the car, which I honestly didn't even realize that dude was there the whole time. I thought there was, I feel like there was three of them, but all of a sudden there's four. I don't know. The movie does a bad job of explaining to you exactly what these guys are and how many there are. So the one that's watching the TV, I think that was my favorite on the sequence.
Oh, knife deck.
Yeah.
You know, I've never done a bunch of coke and watched porn. I wonder what it's like to just be that high and looking at porn. Like, would I be super excited?
Well, I was a little high and a little horny.
Yeah.
A little bit high, a little bit horny.
We all appreciate the mouth breather dying after polishing his car.
Just the axe spinning through the air. And
so good.
That's a great death. I think the visual of that one is my favorite. So simple.
I really appreciate the aesthetic of the beast, the axe. I think it's so beautifully like 80s metal. Like, it's shiny, it's chrome, it's got a weird asymmetrical build. It's got a point.
That's still in the front runner for my Nick Cage themed tattoo right now. Yeah. I haven't thought of anything else visually that, except for the fuck you fish.
Fuck you fish?
The tuna, the fucking fish. When they go to fucking...
Oh, big tuna?
There's just the like metal fish on the outskirts of town. It says fuck you on
okay.
it.
I forgot about that. I forgot it said fuck you on it. But yeah, big tuna. Hell yeah. That's a good idea. I like that. Fuck you, fish.
I don't know which one would be harder to explain to people who see me naked.
Well, get the fuck you fish as a tramp stamp.
Perfect.
That would be nice.
That totally works, actually. Yeah. Overall, I feel like this movie is one of the more tamer Cage films I've seen. I'm from an era where I guess you could say I was watching his slump in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those ended up being some of my favorite movies, honestly, like the slump movies. Obviously enjoy Face Off, but to me, Nick Cage overacting is kind of my favorite Cage. That being said, didn't leave a lot of room for that here, and I still enjoyed it. I could tell he enjoyed making the movie. That was the best part for me. I think there were moments where he really just lost himself in the scenery, which I'm sure he does often, but literally felt like he was the guy. You know, he's not Nick, he's Red for the next 90 minutes. One of the best things that this movie does is it eliminates a lot of dialogue, you know? And so you get to see that kind of himself, like him engulfing himself in a character. You get to see that happen in real time rather than him telling you, oh yeah, I'm red, I hate these guys, they killed my wife, blah blah blah. He's like, no, he's showing you the entire time that he is not a well man, he will never be well again, and he does it without saying anything. In a way, it's a lot like the what was the Five Nights at Freddy's knockoff. It's a lot like that, where he just doesn't
Willy's
say
Wonderland.
Anything. Willy's Wonderland, there we go. Whoever wrote this film was like, there's not a lot of dialogue, we're going to be showing you with emotions and with violence and just basically raw visceral shit. Yeah, man. Like, I feel like this is about as artsy as it gets for Nick Cage. Felt like they could have had some more louder guitars. They kind of had one in that one fight scene where he got the chainsaw and the dude just had a bigger fucking chainsaw. Like,
I don't think that's something we've touched on a lot talking about this movie as many times as we have. Is like, there is humor in it. There is comedy. There beats that I don't think we give enough credit to. And like, yeah, like dude, like him showing up with the chainsaw, like trying to rev it up and just that big fucker just being like, heh. Bigger chainsaw.
This is a chainsaw. You call that a chainsaw?
Little Evil Dead moments kind of sprinkled in throughout where it still totally serves the purpose of the story and the film doesn't suffer for it, but you get that break in the tension and a little bit of a laugh. Yeah. A little bit horny.
And a little bit horny.
I think it's because of the Evil Dead vibe that I kind of expected some more supernatural shit, a little more on the nose stuff. I mean, it didn't hurt that it wasn't there, but I was kind of like, man, it'd be really cool if this Jeremiah dude was actually what he's fucking said he was.
Yeah. Instead of just being kind of a whimpering little fucking cuck.
Basically. Yeah. I felt like at the end, I'm like, no, I called it immediately. He's a little pussy. I get it. But what if he wasn't? What if, like, in the middle of begging for his life, he sprouts fucking shark teeth and bites his dick off?
Well, because you're right. There's that moment where he's like, I'll suck your dick, man. And then he's like, no, wait, you bow before me. And it's like, that would be that power moment, but it's not.
That would be that moment, right? Yeah, I was like, oh, shit, here we go, guys. And no, he's just a pussy. I felt like he portrayed a fragile villain really well. But I was just like, man, what if he's fragile in ego, but not in body? Those are the best kind of villains, in my opinion.
You saw his dick. There's nothing hard there.
I don't know if we can end on a better note.
Thanks, Chris. Do you want to plug anything? You got anything coming up that you want people to know about?
Other than, you know, pitching Fatal Fury City of the Wolves, buy it, play it. I'm going to be probably one of the main commentators for that. So you'll be seeing a lot of me if you're watching streams for that. You can also catch me weekly on twitch.tv/gamegoons, where I stream video games of all kinds. Try to do it weekly, but, you know, what real life gets in the way. And other than that, you know, stay in school.
So drink that Eggo sipping cream.
It's okay for him to goon with the games and not us for gooning. Listen, with, man, the cage.
Gooning is different.
Gooning is different now. I've been hearing it for the last 3 years. I go to an event in Vegas annually called Evo. It's a fighting game tournament. And every night before it starts on Thursday night, I have a suite where all of our fans and followers can come and play and hang out with us.
Fuck yeah.
It's called the Goon Suite. I've been doing it since 2016. The last 3 years, people will be calling, like, people will literally message me and say, it's called the what suite?
Like, the word changed, people.
It's the Goon Suite. It's where you go to come. What?
I hate this language.
Ben, don't chew my toe. Yes, I know you got to go outside. Give me 15 minutes.
Ben's into some freaky shit. Yeah, he's up here shrimping.
I forgot about shrimping.
Oh, man. I'm always thinking about shrimping.
You.
No, these. I think we had two really good guests for two really good movies, and both made great fucking points.
Yeah, I agree with you. And this was one of those that I was kind of like dreading because, you know, I'm mixed feelings on Mandy, and I think I finally got my finger on why I don't love it as much, because I should. Like, it's visually stunning. It's interesting. It moves at a clip, even though it's long. And I think what it is for me is it makes me feel like a little embarrassed. And it reminds me of being like 10 and looking at my older brother's like cool dark comic books about, like, you know, sorcerers and shit, and like making up my own dumb stories without actually reading any of it and just looking at the cool art. And I think that's how I feel about this, where it's like, it's a series of beautiful paintings with like a loose story that's kind of tying it all together. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it feels like I could have written that story when I was younger and it would have been stupid and I would have felt embarrassed about it. So
you would,
like,
have had all,
but then
those same,
there's gonna,
like,
be some boob drawings, and then I don't know, there's a tiger and drugs.
That's interesting, because so I mean that's I get that and I like that, and it's, but it's one of those things where I'm like, there are movies of when I was younger that like kind of had this metal aesthetic and this like the hyperviolence, the boobs and all that stuff that I would cringe at now. I'm thinking of fucking The Crow as one of those era of films. But like this, because of the cinematography, because of the intensity of the character and just how much it actually just leans into not trying to be a studio film, I think this holds up better, and this has much more like weight behind it, where I don't feel that kind of awkward like adolescent like first boner shame.
No, I think you're spot on. It's a better representation of it. I think that's just what I was finally tapping into, because I've thought about like what makes me uncomfortable about this movie every time I've watched it, and at first I thought it was because it was grimy, and then I was like, I don't like violence that much, but I don't know. So anyway, I think that's my final feeling on it, is that it's like, it just makes me feel a little bit dorky.
Yeah, I think there is just something incredibly dorky about this film. Like that might be just a side effect of the like kind of fantasy pulp novel sort of kind of exists in it.
That's an interesting take that I hadn't considered, that like this, there is the trope of like the revenge, like the revenge fantasy, the revenge thriller, like, you know, normal guy gets revenge on those who wronged him. But this movie pushes that to the point where it's like Chris said, you know, like you see how that transforms Red. You see like, you know, there's the John Wick, like, oh, he's going to be a badass because he was wrong. It's like, no, he's broken. That's why he murders, because they broke him. And now there's nothing about Red that I think you want to be at the end of this. He's not the cool guy. He's just a monster now. He's just sad.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. And then, I mean, on the other hand, speaking of cartoonish, you have a very cartoonish performance in Vampire's Kiss too.
Right.
They're both like kind of absurd and kind of silly. And
in response to like what performance stands out more, I definitely feel more inclined to say Vampire's Kiss, in that it was a film of performance choices, and it highlights Nicolas Cage, whereas like, well, as Chris said, like you could have put somebody else in as Red,
Keith Urban, who I think is a country singer.
Didn't he say Carl Urban? Isn't he the guy
said
from
Keith
the
Urban
Lizard? He said Keith Urban, which is,
that
a,
is
country
a country
singer.
You could probably put Keith Urban in there, I don't know.
But he meant Carl Urban, I assume.
Yeah, undoubtedly. Although, I don't know. I'm not going to put words in his mouth. It could have been Keith Urban.
We'll find out.
Yeah, Chris struck me as like a big country pop person.
Yeah.
Vampire's Kiss, it just has like such a could only happen once sort of element and feel to the film, sort of like Mandy. So they both have to exist as white whales. Great white buffaloes, white jags.
White jags.
These are both white jags. We got there.
Like both Chris and Lauren both kind of pointed out for both these films, it's just like these movies cannot be remade. These movies cannot exist now. I think in terms of comparing the two, Vampire's Kiss is very much sold on Nick Cage's performance. Be that performance good or bad, like there are performance choices, and the movie is that character. Whereas I think Mandy as a whole is a much better film and is much stronger. Like the sum of its parts is much better, but it's not sold on, like, maybe Nick Cage gets you in the door, but that's not what's going to keep you there.
Vampire's Kiss is the far more approachable film too. People are going to be put off by Mandy. Peter is put off by Mandy. And like, that's it's totally fine. It doesn't detract from the film, but in terms of our experiment here too, it's hard to ignore the fact that one of them is very niche and the other one is very nicheless Cage. And
I mean, you and I talked about this briefly, that I can't recommend Mandy to most people.
No. Certainly not like on a first date. Wait, didn't your date like watch Mandy before you guys?
She got, yeah, I'd asked her, we were texting and I asked her if she'd ever watched Mandy and she said no. And I'm like, that's a fucking trip. And I like sent her a photo of the scene I was watching, which is him in his tidy whiteies in the bathroom. And she laughed and she's like, I'm going to put it on right now. She's like, I'm falling asleep, so I don't know how much it'll get into. And when I asked her last night how far she got into it, she's like, I got to her crying at the stillborn deer and passed out. I'm like, that's probably the safest place to fall asleep.
Yeah, that's a good out. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've been going back and forth on both of these films in terms of what I would want to see go forward. And I put on Vampire's Kiss this morning, and for him alone, I think that's my vote.
I'm definitely in the, it was a hard decision, but Vampire's Kiss for me, not only is it just a compelling film to watch because you don't know what's going to happen next, it's just so interesting trying to think how he got to the point of making these choices. Mm-hmm. Like how many of them were just spur of the moment things that he did. It's, I don't know. Like I am just completely captivated by this performance. It just holds me and I'm like, there's nothing else like it. I love it.
When I put it on, I just started smiling. I was like, this fucking movie.
Yeah, it is one of those things. It's like, oh, I get to fucking watch Vampire's Kiss tonight. And when I was watching these, I watched them in a hotel room on traveling for work. And there wasn't even like a thought of which one am I going to watch tonight? It's just like I booted up the old iPad and Vampire's Kiss. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, that's a pretty strong.
And strong, these movies are both treats. These are both movies like we get to watch it. Like we're at the part in this bracket where we get to watch the movies we like. I think for me, I will probably wind up watching Mandy more over the course of my life, like start to finish. Whereas with Vampire's Kiss, I'm probably like, I'll watch it again, but I mostly, when I'm getting that itch, I'll probably just look up scenes from it as opposed to watching the whole piece.
Make it official. It is decided.
I did not hear that at all.
Interesting. Well, tap it on the microphone.
No, nothing.
Weird.
Clippity clop, cloop clop. I'm a judge.
Did you hear that?
Yes. Also, that is now the sound of him it being decided.
I agree.
We're gonna piss off some horses, but fuck them. They're not real.
Yeah, fuck those horses.
Oh man.
All right. Thank you all for listening. If you want to chat with us on social media, we're at @cage_match_pod. Or if you want to support us on Patreon, we are Cage Match Pod. And thank you to our Sparkle buddies, Josh, Sean, Josie, Rico, Matt, Adam, and Bill. And to our cage dancers, Ira, John, Freeman, Lance, Nathan, and Cameron. And clip clop.
I need to learn how to like make like foam costumes, like proper mascot costumes.
Oh, that's an investment.
I'm gonna be on YouTube for the rest of the day, like learning how to like a felt. I should start with a more scaled head. I'll make a 1-to-1 head of Nick that I can wear.
Ooh, 1-to-1.
Yeah, of my
he's got
head.
A giant melon. Pretty,
you still can fit in. Yeah.
Shots fired so gently.
Just to wear it like a motorcycle helmet.
Yeah. Take out an additional home loan or whatever just for the felt, because you're going to need a lot of felt to cover this dome. So there's always a white elephant gift exchange. And last year I took home like this golden hand and an 8-inch black dildo with a suction cup.
Fucking awesome.
Yeah. And I think the Welcome to Pound Town sign also, that's above our bed. We kept that. And this year I gave back the hand and the dildo, but sitting above those and concealing that, I put in a Chuck Tingle book. So Buttageddon, the final days of pounding ass. And
awesome.
Found out that one of my friends is 1 degree of separation away from Chuck Tingle.
they were asking me questions about who Chuck Tingle is, and they're like, what does he look like, this and that, and I was like, oh well, nobody knows because he wears a pink like sack over his head that just says love is real on his forehead. And they're like, wait, that's Chuck Tingle? And apparently one of their friends is friends with him.
Huh. Yeah. Cool.
Can we get him on the podcast?
That would be an interesting episode.
Yeah, we would have to do Chuck Tingle's podcast as well. I would be okay with that.
I would go on Chuck Tingle's podcast.
Yeah, talk about how love is real.
Yeah.
And buckaroos. And
yeah. How my ass can butt fuck my other ass or whatever.